I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is the brilliant young saxophone player and composer, Ravi Coltrane. He is the son of the great John Coltrane, and he is continuing the legacy he has inherited by developing his own individual sound and feeling. Ravi is undoubtedly his own man as he continues to fulfill his musical dreams. Ravi, how are you?
I'm doing great.
It's really nice to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you for asking.
I guess I'd like to sort of go into the family history a little bit.
Okay.
Because it seems like I've known your family for so many years. Like, I met your mother years ago when I was working at a place called the Hickory House. I used to run over to Birdland a lot to hear Terry Gibbs, and your mother, Alice Coltrane, had just joined him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a kick. She was such a wonderful player on the vibes and piano.
Oh, yeah.
And well, I guess that's before she and you and your father got married.
That's true. The story that she told me is that they actually met at the Birdland.
That may well be. And her name was, at that time, Alice MacLeod.
Alice MacLeod, yes.
And she was a tremendous musician.
Wow. That's
as good. You well know.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And still is.
But, you know, I was so lucky that I got to hear your father with the original group, with Jimmy Garrison, Elvin Jones, and McCoy Tyner.
Mm.
And it really changed my whole life. There's something about his playing and about the group as a whole that I found myself playing a different way from then on. It's amazing.
Yeah, it that group had that, they had that power, I think, you know, that their sound was so original and so unique as a whole, as a group, that it did, it changed the way everybody thought musically.
I guess your dad died when you were pretty young, though, didn't he?
Yes, he passed away in 1967, and I was born in 65. And through my mother, I've, you know, heard stories about the type of man he was and the type of person he was, you know, through great stories, from my mother. And I've kind of gotten to know what he was about in terms of his music from the records, of course, just like everybody else. You know, we all have access to this great treasure trove of albums and things.
And so, he's just as great today as he ever was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, his reputation and his memory and everything he did is just as in everybody's mind now as it was years ago.
Yeah, I really feel, I don't really think of him or speak about him in the past tense. You know, with all of your heroes in music, you kind of think of them in the present tense. We talk about Bird and what Bird did, and Bird's music or John Coltrane's music. It's not as if it's not around us anymore or really present in our lives today.
Well, that's what's so wonderful about jazz. You know, the music lives on regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, before we go any further, it would be great if you and I could play something together.
Oh, most definitely.
What do you think about a good old Cole Porter tune? What is this thing called Love?
Sounds fantastic.
All right.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting playing duets like this and sort of feeling where the rhythm is. It's something different for me. I don't get to do this.
Oh well, I'm the same way. It creates an interesting challenge, you know, to depend on the internal rhythm and just to try to play and not feel that you have to. You know, someone has to take the role as a drummer, take the role as a bassist, but to just truly make it a duet and have things go where they may.
You know? Well, as you said, internal rhythm, that's something you sort of have to have an inner clock telling you where one is.
Very important. You need that even with a rhythm section. You know, it's always important.
It's interesting doing this and then... Sometimes do you ever do things with just a bass player?
Living in New York, you constantly want to kind of seek out other musicians and things like that. So oftentimes, to meet or hook up, as we say, with another musician, it's usually two people. You know, whether it's I've always wanted to play with this drummer. So why don't you just come over? You come to my place and I ended up playing a lot of duets in that same way. You know, maybe we couldn't get a whole band together and only a few guys could get together. So, but I always have a good time.
I think that's great. You know, that's one of the great things about jazz, the freedom. You're not sitting down to everybody playing a piece of music and looking at the chart and reading all the markings. You know, you can really be free to do your own thing and react to what the other person's doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what's fun about this. And when you think we never played together before, it ain't bad.
That's the beauty of improvised music. You know, it's a language. You know,
it is a language.
We both speak the language of, our spoken language is English, so we never rehearsed having this conversation, or we didn't have to meet prior to discuss, the words that we choose and when we choose to use them, we didn't plan that out. You know, the fact that we know the language well enough to juggle it around and find different phrases to match, the course of the conversation, that's the greatest thing about playing music, you know, this type of music.
Well, now, I mean, how did you learn some of these tunes? Just hearing them?
Well, I went to school, you know. I think there's a...
The University in California?
I went to a school called CalArts, California
Institute
of the Arts.
Oh, yes, of course.
Charlie Hayden is the artistic director.
Oh, there. Right, yes.
And it was a dear old family friend, you know, somebody I remember seeing around the house, you know, when I was young and things. And basically due to him, I sought that school out, you know, when I made the decision to learn more about music. When I actually started school, it was 1986, I think I turned 21. I have to think back, yeah. And it kind of took that long in my life to choose a direction. I wasn't set on, I didn't go to this school saying, okay, I'm going to be a musician. It was really like an experiment. You know, I started listening to these records during that time, and I felt like, well, maybe I should, you know, because I had some experience with the clarinet and things like that. I had never really played jazz or never really improvised before.
Well, you certainly got into it in a great hurry, it seems like.
It took over, you know. It really kind of took over, you know. And being in school and being surrounded by that type of environment, you know, it motivates you to learn. You
sure,
know?
And then you play with different people and you can actually, a lot of tunes you probably play by... on the job or by hearing them, or you learn them by doing them?
I think that more of the standards I probably learned in school. You know, when I got to New York, a lot of people were dealing with original music. The bands that I've been playing, and most recently, that's basically all that we do, you know. And it's something I always encourage, you know, and something I feel that is necessary, you know, to kind of develop a personal sound. I think it has to go beyond the instrument that you play. It has to work its way into your compositions or your concepts in terms of, you know, what types of groups that you put together and things like that.
Well, you have to write new music because as wonderful as all the standard tunes are, somebody said to me a little while ago, well, if we don't keep writing our own tunes, we'll... 100 years from now, we'll still be playing Duke and Billy Strayhorn tunes. We won't have anything of our own, which is true, but just the same, I still love to play Duke and Billy Strayhorn tunes.
That's the thing. Those tunes, you know, will never, their importance will never, ever fade. You know, they're always going to be great contributions, you know.
Well, let's do one.
Okay.
Let's do one.
By the way.
What about... In a Sentimental Mood.
That's a beautiful tune.
Isn't that a good tune?
A great tune.
You know, I've always loved that tune. It's one of my favorite Duke Ellington tunes. And I really enjoyed the album that Duke did with your father, John Coltrane.
Yeah, it's a classic.
It's a classic, and it's just one of my prized possessions at home.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful rendition of a great tune, and it was, I think it was just a great meeting, you know, that these two figures of music, you know, different eras, really, and different, different in so many ways, but also so together in so many ways, you know, would come together and make such a great record.
Well, both of them were so open in their attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, you couldn't maybe put two different musicians together and have it gel like that, but yeah, they were just so open and free, so that's what made it so wonderful.
Yeah, it worked perfectly.
Well, there are more things I want to ask you, but first I should let our listeners know my guest is Ravi Coltrane. You know, I remember, I think I was playing at the Hickory House a long time ago when the record of Giant Steps came out, and that was really like a landmark recording. Mm-hmm. By your father, John Coltrane, and everybody wanted to hear it and wanted to play the tunes, and I tried for the longest time to get that under my fingers, but after you really know it, it's not so bad, but in the beginning, it was really hard for
me. Yeah, it's like algebra, you know, it's hard to conceive that it's really music, you know, but once you get inside it, you start to see that... you know, there are a lot of possibilities. You know.
I should say, and of course, the choruses he played were so inspired. I think some people even transcribed them, didn't they?
Oh, of course, yeah, and they're still transcribing them, you know, still.
Right. But anyway, well, maybe we could have a go at the two. You must play it once in a while.
Once in a while, yeah, yeah, of course.
I mean, we don't have to do it at a breakneck tempo, but whatever you'd like. Like, I've heard it as like a bossa nova ballad.
Yeah, I've done it as a ballad, and you know, it's just one of those tunes that is once you do kind of get it under your fingers, it is a lot of fun, and you can find, you know, new ways to get it out there, I think.
Well, let's do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Boy, that really is an incredible tune. And I wish John was around so I could ask him how he ever thought of that. maybe your mother had some ideas. Was able to tell you something about that tune.
I learned so much from my mother, you know, not only about my father and his music, but about my mother and her music and just her, you know, any mother's take on the world. You know, she raised four kids by herself, so I do kind of credit her with most of the things that I've learned and checked out and things like that.
And she's such a wonderful musician.
She's great, and she plays Giant Steps very well, and she's great.
Yeah. Alice Coltrane, she's a wonderful musician, and it was such fun getting to know her, and she even let me play the harp. And you know, you really can't sound bad on a harp.
we
just run up and down the strings, you know.
We had plenty of fun with that harp as little children running around the house and tearing everything up.
But anyway, there's another tune, another John Coltrane tune that I've always enjoyed playing, and I guess it was probably on the record of Giant Steps, and that's Naima. Was that on that record?
Yes.
Because I that must be where I learned that. I'd love to play it anyway.
I'd love to hear you play it.
Okay. Here goes.
Thank you.
that was just very, very special. You know, I haven't really heard Naima played. A lot of people don't play the tune, you know, I think for different reasons. Sometimes people don't want to touch music they think is sacred, or some ideas that I think are kind of silly sometimes, because music is supposed to be played. But I haven't heard it played in a long time, and I haven't heard it played so nicely, so beautifully in such a long time. It's really, really
Thank
special.
You.
Thank you.
I don't know. It's in the repertoire. I never heard that people thought it was, like, too sacred to play. I mean, it's such a gorgeous tune that it should be, everybody
course,
should
yeah,
play it.
Of course.
I play it a lot. I haven't recorded it, but I'm thinking about it.
I should.
The opening phrase, that's such a wonderful, you know. I mean, who would think of that? God, so nice. Well, we'll have more talk and music in a minute. But first, I want to let you know that my guest is Ravi Coltrane. You know, your new record has quite a collection of people on it, and I love that title, Moving Pictures.
Oh, thanks. It is a great group, and I was really fortunate that I'd kind of made these associations over the years, you know, working with different, working as a sideman, that's how you meet musicians, you know.
And Jeff Tane Watts, he's on The Tonight Show.
Oh, well, he was on The Tonight Show. He's back in New York, thank God, and is playing great music here. And he's always been somebody I admired, you know, even when I was in school. I, you know, used to go see Wynton Marsalis when he'd had that band with Kenny Kirkland and Jeff Watts. You know, this is early on in, the mid-80s. And so Jeff was always somebody I really looked up to. And when I got to New York, I had a chance to start working with him in kind of different situations, so I was really lucky that he, wanted to do some projects with me. And
then you had Steve Coleman.
Steve Coleman, who's been kind of a mentor in different ways, a guy, you know, another great leader that I had a chance to work with and borrow ideas from. You know, I've been lucky in that respect too. When I first got to New York, before I came to New York, Elvin Jones was the first person to kind of take me under their wing, really.
Was that your first gig working with Elvin?
That was my first gig.
My goodness.
Really,
that
like.
Really jumped into the big time.
Thrown into the out of the frying pan, into the fire kind
no,
of
but
thing.
What's so interesting is that was the drummer with your dad's group.
Of course, and it made it even much harder for some of those reasons, too. When I was in school, when I got a call from Elvin, and I had met him maybe 3 or 4 months earlier, he was playing at Catalina's Bar and Grill in Hollywood, and I wanted to see him because he hadn't played in L.A. in maybe 7 or 8 years, so there was a whole bunch of excitement around him being in town. And also I hadn't really met him in my adult life, so I just wanted to see him. I never told him that I was playing music or I was a saxophone player. I just wanted to meet him. And but I think people around him, Wallace Roney, a great trumpet player, was playing with Elvin that week, and Wallace was kind of saying, oh, yeah, you need to check out Rob. You should check him out. He's a good guy and everything. So Wallace was kind of instrumental in getting Elvin to call me. And he finally called me months later, and he said, do you want to do some gigs? And my first reaction was like, well, I'm still in school, and I know musically I'm not ready to play with Elvin. And the fact that my last name is Coltrane, I knew it would be kind of a distraction for me and maybe for him and the rest of the band and maybe even the audiences, you know. But you know, he was so supportive and so kind of guiding that I felt that it, it was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. You know?
Well, I'm glad you did. And I don't know, just great things seem to be happening for you. And I'm sure this record is doing well, and you're probably working on a new one. It seems like you're sort of moving ahead.
I'm trying.
With everything.
I'm trying.
Well, Ravi, what do you think? Should we have a go at another tune?
I'd love to.
Well,
perhaps maybe a nice tune like Stella by Starlight.
Oh, that'd be great. That's one of my favorite tunes. I'm one of the lucky people that when I was playing in a club years ago, the guy that wrote it, Victor Young, was sitting there. So I don't know. That's one of my good memories.
Maybe I could play soprano on this one.
I think that'd be great.
I'm playing more tenor these days, but the soprano is really, I started the soprano first. You know, I'm playing clarinet in junior high and high school. My mother bought me a soprano for my birthday to kind of surprise me and also kind of maybe nudge me a little bit toward the saxophone. You know, she felt that the soprano was close enough to the clarinet that I could kind of adapt to it quickly. So
your mother was pretty smart.
She was.
Yeah. Was and is. Okay, let's have at it.
Thank you. Thank you.